Welcome to Friends of the Force. I'm your host, Brad Whipple, and this is your Star Wars podcast for positivity and collaboration. On today's episode for From a Certain Point of View, we are joined by a editor and writer over at Nerdist, and she is now coming out with her own Star Wars podcast centered on the Reylo community. So we are thrilled to have her here joining us today to talk about her Star Wars fandom, being a freelance writer, and more on Reylo and Bendemption. So sit back and relax. It's time to find out, from a certain point of view, what Star Wars means to writer and editor Lindsay Romaine.
You told me Vader betrayed and murdered my father.
Your father was seduced by the dark side of the Force. He ceased to be Anakin Skywalker and became Darth Vader. When that happened, the good man who was your father was destroyed. So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
A certain point of view?
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
Well, joining me today here on Friends of the Force, she is a writer and editor for Nerdist, and she has a new podcast coming out called Halo Reylo. I'm joined today by Lindsay Romaine. Lindsay, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you on. For those of our listeners out there who aren't familiar with your work, can you give a short introduction to yourself and what you do in the Star Wars fandom?
Yeah, so I'm a writer. I was a freelance writer for a long time, and now I'm a editor slash staff writer at Nerdist. So I tend to write, a lot about Star Wars. I'd say that's probably the main thing that I cover for us. And I tend to write a lot about Rey and Kylo, if you couldn't tell from the title of my my podcast. So that seems to be my kind of corner of the Star Wars world.
What a great corner, though. I mean, we're having the most fun over here as a fellow Reylo and Bendemptionist. It is a great corner to be in, and I think we'll be pretty happy come December. Now, I first discovered your work back in June. So you had written on June 18th an article in Nerdist titled "Why Kylo Ren Should Be Redeemed in the Rise of Skywalker." So this was the first ever article I read, and the way you wrote it, the way you wove in like mythology and ancient Greek legends, all this different stuff. And it was just fascinating. And I was like, in my mind, a light bulb went off, like, wow, this is how you can write about Star Wars, you know? And then a week or so after that, you were on Sky Talkers for the Rey and Kylo symbolism episode. I don't know if that was like one of your first Star Wars podcast appearances or not. Was that something new for you when you're on with Sky Talkers? And what's it been like just writing about Star Wars professionally?
Yeah, well, I don't know if that was my first Star Wars podcast. I've definitely talked about Star Wars on other podcasts. It might have been the first, like, Star Wars specific podcast I was. Oh, actually, you know what? No, that's a lie. I was on, oh gosh, I can't remember the name of it on the spot. I've definitely done another one before. I did one through Making Star Wars as Podcasting Network once.
Okay.
Yeah, with the women. I've done that before. I did the Slash Filmcast. I was on their Last Jedi episode. So I've talked about Star Wars definitely in the podcasting world before. And then for writing about it, I mean, it's something that kind of has been natural, I guess. I'd say really around The Last Jedi is when I started writing about Star Wars kind of almost predominantly, I guess. That one just really sparked an interest. And at the time when that came out, I was still a freelancer. So it was a lot of pitching, you know, ideas about this and stuff, which is, you know, the struggle a little bit. But luckily that one gave me a lot of good food for thought.
Yeah.
And then, with Nerdist, the cool thing about writing for Nerdist is that the editors there really tailor your interests. Like, they bring that into what they let you cover. So I think I pretty quickly, like, we all read about Star Wars there, but I think I kind of, like, quickly made that my main brand at Nerdist. And so, so it's just kind of, luckily too, Nerdist really supports all my kind of crazy ideas. Like, I throw out some bonkers ones sometimes and they're usually pretty receptive as long as I can back it up. So
yeah, as long as you got the facts there, any idea can be a good one. So for the most part.
Exactly.
So you starting out as a Star Wars fan, you answered some questions on Sky Talkers and other podcasts that you've been on. What was it like starting out as a Star Wars fan? Like, when did you enter into the fandom, and or not necessarily the fandom, but just becoming a Star Wars fan and then maybe eventually that part of fandom online?
Yeah, so I think it's always hard. I have a hard time answering this question because Star Wars is just something that's always been like kind of a part of my life. I grew up, my family was into it. My older brother had all the toys and like the VHS tapes and stuff. So I think like my real first exposure was through the toys. I remember having like Princess Leia dolls and Luke Skywalker dolls. I like actively almost remember just like scenarios I made with those dolls more than I do the movies when I was like a little kid. And then I'd say like I first started having more of an awareness of like actually what Star Wars was when the prequels came out. I was, I think, 10 when Phantom Menace came out. So I was, you know, right in the target audience for those and kind of grew up with them. So by the time Revenge of the Sith came out, I was like a teenager and, you know, feeling all the things that I think like Anakin's feeling.
Really? You know? Yeah, yeah, relating to all the Anakin angst.
Yeah, yeah. And I really, like, I would say my first proper, like, very distinct Star Wars memory as a fan was seeing that movie at midnight. I went with my family. And, you know, at the time we thought it was, like, the last Star Wars movie. So we were very, we, like, dressed up and stuff. We had a lot of fun. So it was, like, me and my family and my friends all went to that. And then that one really caught my interest. Like, I think, like I said, because my emotions were kind of parallel with, like, what was going on there. And I remember I saw that in theaters, I think, like, 4 or 5 times just by myself. I just kept going back and watching it. So that was, like, what really sparked it. And I remember going back and rewatching the other movies, like, properly this time and really getting into it. I think that's when I started reading, like, some of the, you know, EU books and stuff that my brother had. So that's, like, when I remember getting properly into it. And then it kind of faded, I guess, as I, like, got older and went through other fan obsessions and stuff. And then, you know, the sequel trilogy came around, and that was kind of happening at the same time that I was starting to build a writing career. So it just kind of happened nicely that, like, my interest in Star Wars was rejuvenated as I was starting to, like, get more professional writing opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Your story seems to be a very Rey story. I think of her line in The Last Jedi, something inside me has always been there, but now it's awake. You know, you said, totally, you mentioned Star Wars is always just kind of there for you. And then finally it awakens with The Revenge of the Sith. And then literally later on with The Force Awakens. So
that's
when you,
very true.
Yeah. When you talked about the sequel trilogy is kind of around the time that you started to become a professional writer. So did you always know that you wanted to be a writer? Was that always kind of there in your mind, but then the sequel trilogy really cemented that for you? Or were you on a completely different trajectory before that?
I think it's kind of complicated. So I knew I always wanted to be a writer growing up. That was the one thing I was really good at. The one thing I like had the most interest in. I just didn't know what outlet I wanted to choose for that writing. I didn't know if I wanted to like go the creative route or the journalism route or whatever. So I kind of struggled with that for a long time. I was trying to like do both in college, and I really sort of took to journalism once I was in school. But I always knew when I was doing journalism, I was like, I want to write about movies. Like, I knew that I didn't know if I necessarily wanted to be a film critic. I just knew I wanted to, like, blend my love of movies and television and, like, media and stuff with the writing that I was doing. So I kind of actually created my own major in college. I did a film minor and a journalism major. So I was kind of going back and forth between the two departments at my school and stuff, and really I was targeting all of my journalism projects to media related stuff.
It's a great combination.
Yeah, it was really
fantastic.
Fun. I was the only one really doing that, which to me seems crazy now. I'm like, I can't believe more people weren't like, I want to write about movies, but I want to write about, you know, have my journalism degree. So to me it felt like kind of the best of both worlds. Like, I was getting a practical degree, sort of practical, I guess, and then like still having fun with it. And then when I graduated college, I ended up working kind of in, this is kind of boring, I ended up doing like kind of boring, like just random writing jobs, but I was always writing. So I've always been a professional writer in some capacity since I graduated. And I started working for the Chicago Tribune for a while. I did social media stuff for them, kind of on like a contract basis. And then there I was writing for their pop culture publication also. So that was kind of when I first like started to get professional clips that way. And then I was kind of, that's when I started freelancing more too. And then I had a job at a bookstore. I was just kind of, you know, writer's life, like doing like whatever I could to like stay alive. And, but yeah, I would say it was like right around the sequel trilogy that I started to freelance in like kind of a serious way. And then I worked at a television station for a while. So I kind of put the freelancing thing to bed a little bit, but was trying to like do it on the side every now and then. I'd like maybe do an article every few months. And then I think the first like big article I got published was actually about Rogue One. So that was like when I first really crossed over, was around that time.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the struggle of the writer's life. Now, what has kind of been some of the most like challenging aspects of that? And also just like, what advice might you have for somebody out there who is an aspiring writer, you know, whether it's their, whether it film and TV is their big interest or fashion or whatever, like what's your best piece of advice based on your experiences that you've been through?
My best piece of advice is kind of like, it's going to sound kind of depressing, but it's, you know, really only do it if that's like the only thing you want to do, because it's hard. It's really hard. It's not, you know, for me, it was always just like, I didn't know what else to do. It was the skill that I felt the strongest at and like the thing I had kind of worked for. But throughout the whole time, I was like, man, if only I had one other thing I liked to do, because this is so hard, especially freelancing. The hardest part about freelancing is just kind of in a technical way, it's that you never know like when your paycheck's coming. You know, every place has a different system. And when you're trying to pay rent and bills and stuff, it can be really hard. So I would say if you really want to be a writer, but have some kind of other field, I would like test the waters on the side. So, you know, try to freelance or put stuff out, even just blog or something, and make sure that you're really confident in your skills before you start trying to make that your full-time thing. Because it's not a life that I would really wish on people sometimes. Like, it sounds very glamorous and fun once you get to the point where you're secure. It definitely is. Yeah. But it's very hard.
Yeah, you're kind of a small fish in a bigger sea when you get into that industry. And it, you know, I think the writing you're putting out is fantastic, and I'm sure it's going to continue to pay off for you, and you're doing great work. So all of us Star Wars fans do appreciate your writing. In terms of anybody else that's influenced you writing wise, has there ever been any particular stories or articles or books that have really shown you the strength of the written word and like how it can have an impact on anybody?
Ooh, yeah, I'd say it depends on like, you know, there's definitely like fiction writers who have really influenced me. I'm a huge Shirley Jackson fan. She's kind of a really good horror writer who sort of writes through the female gaze. She's been a huge influence. I mean, even in my nonfiction stuff, honestly, like I always just try to pepper it with some of her kind of wit. She had a really, really great sense of humor. I mean, not to be basic, but you know, Carrie Fisher also was a huge, huge influence on me. She's one of my biggest inspirations just as a writer, because same, she's also very funny, but very smart, just like whip smart when you read her books.
Yeah.
And just anything that she's written, she's really great. So she was obviously
The Princess Diarist was the last book that she came out with, right?
That was her last one, which was she wrote around her diaries basically that she kept when she was like 19 and filming the first Star Wars. So that one, if you go back and read her writing when she was 19 years old, it is astounding. She was so smart and such a good writer. And I mean, she continued to be a good writer, but like if I had had those skills when I was 19 years old, like it's the kind of writing that, you know, grown adults would aspire to. So
She is our very own princess prodigy, our general.
Yes, absolutely. And she continues to be. I continue to read her stuff, honestly, just sometimes, you know, she's been a nice kind of anchor for a lot of stuff, too. Obviously, she wrote about mental illness and, you know, different things that I think a lot of us have experienced. So, she continues to be very relevant to me as a writer. In terms of, like, I'm trying to think of people, like, in my field, maybe, that inspired me. The one writer I always kind of give a shout out to is Amy Nicholson. She's a freelance writer now, but she was one of the first, like, kind of, she does a lot of podcasts and stuff now. She was somebody who I think just kind of wrote without regard to, like, what people really think about her opinions. Like, she's just very much her own, has her own perspective as a writer. And I think for me, especially when I was in film school, I felt a lot of times like I had to like the movies that everybody else liked. You know, I had to like all of the kind of macho movies or whatever.
Yeah.
And it took reading like good female writers like her to be like, oh no, I can like Titanic if I want to. Like, I can like Star Wars if I want to. You know, I didn't feel like I had to, I don't know, certain writers like her have made me feel more confident in just being, you know, being liking what you like and writing about that.
Yeah, I totally feel that, you know, having all these big movies coming out that everybody's talking about, and sometimes you can kind of feel pressured into liking them just because you want to be a part of the conversation, but I think it takes a lot to really just step out of that zone and like you said, like what you like and kind of die on those sorts of hills, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's when the writing that you do is the best, is mm-hmm. when you're really confident in like what you actually believe. And I think just learning to let go of like caring if you sound cool on Twitter, you know, like that's, it's hard. And that sounds really like yes. silly, but it's actually really hard so when you're trying to break out for sure.
Now, in regards to Star Wars, what has it been about this franchise and these movies that have really connected with you? Because I know, at least for myself, you know, they connected with me one way when the I saw the original trilogy, and then the prequel trilogy kind of changed that. And then the sequel trilogy has drastically changed the way I look at and interact with Star Wars. I laugh at people who say, you know, Star Wars is dead. It's running out of steam. I'm like, I think Star Wars was dead before we got these new movies, honestly, in a way. You know, it was yeah. vacant in our lives for so long, and now it's changed so dramatically. The landscape looks so different. So what has been the impact on you, and why is it connected with you?
Yeah, it's something I think about all the time, because sometimes I do wonder, like, it's not something on paper. I've not really always been into stuff like this. And so it's hard for me sometimes to pinpoint, like, why does Star Wars speak to me in such a way? I do think the sequel trilogy really like rejuvenated that love, because it was finally giving us these stories through kind of a female gaze. You know, we're seeing a woman's perspective and sort of the hero's journey. And if that felt rare to me. Mm-hmm. And I think I really latched onto Rey. I know you already kind of made that comparison, but it's very true. I think like this feeling of, I remember seeing The Force Awakens and I was excited for the movie, but, you know, seeing it obviously really like doubled down on my excitement, and just seeing this character who's very lonely, feels kind of out of place with things, and just latches on to these people who come into her life and like present this exciting fantasy. I think there's something really escapist in that speaks to me for sure. And then I think, you know, there's so many different ways to talk about that, but I do feel like the sequel trilogy has just kind of given me these more intense feelings. You know, obviously the fun mm-hmm. adventure stuff is really apparent in the original trilogy, but I don't know that I felt quite, you know, the deeper themes the way that I do yeah. now. And a lot of that's through reading what other people have written about it and just kind of experiencing the fandom with other people who have like minds. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to like, you know, like,
yeah, I think the fascinating thing about Star Wars too, is like, you can enjoy it on any different level of
yeah.
that you want. Like, you can like it for those action adventure moments, or the pew pews, as I refer to them, you know, or like the really deep mythology. And it's cool to find those subsects of people that you can talk to about those sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, not to like immediately get into like the Reylo stuff, but I do think like finding that community really like helped me too, because I was feeling a little disenchanted with the fandom after just all the conversations after The Last Jedi, not the movie, but the kind of, you know, all the bad stuff online. Yeah. Afterwards, it was hard.
Wait, there's bad like, stuff online? What? I've never heard of this.
I know it's surprising, but I promise you it's there. No, but I think I felt kind of just really bummed out after that, just because I loved the movie and I wanted to talk about it in a positive way. And like, I just felt like I couldn't put that out into the world without only like receiving negativity back. So it was really kind of the Reylo fandom that was like, oh no, here's like other women and men and people who, you know, are seeing something that I'm seeing in these stories and want to talk about it on this deeper level. And it's not just like the vitriol. So I think that was like a nice way back in.
Yeah. And I know you said, you know, not to get into Reylo, but let's, because that is the name of your podcast. And I want to go back to one of your articles. I'm going to put you on the spot here, okay. But in a good way, because I was reading this. Do it, as Palpatine would say. So you wrote this article back in June, and it's called The Case for Reylo and Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. It was almost like you were destined to make a podcast about Reylo. So you wrote, think back to Anakin and Padme and their doomed love, which destroyed the Jedi Order and inadvertently created the Empire. And then you later wrote, by creating two all-powerful Force users, you asked, so how does the Force, this almighty power, reckon with its destruction? By creating two all-powerful Force users from different worlds and different sides, drawn together by fate and passion. Romantic love broke the Jedi Order. It might be the only thing that can save it. I was like, mic drop, Lindsay Romaine. Dang. Like that line. And this, and again, is just why I love the way you write this. Do you want to talk a little bit about just the, I don't know if you've been well-versed in like the reverse Anadala, all that stuff. I'm sure you have. But in terms of just like the idea of like, you know, Star Wars being a love story. And I try not to harp too much on Reylo, but it's central to the story, and I'm a huge fan of it. And I think this trilogy is going to be that love story once again. It's going to repeat those same story beats.
Yeah, I think so. I'm definitely familiar with the Reverse Anadala through, you know, other things that other people have written about it in a really smart way. I think what you just, like, the line that you said, obviously I wrote that, but it was something that kind of, like, when I came to that conclusion, you know, like, even in my own head, because I was trying to, like, put to words, I was like, why do I feel like this is such a powerful thing? Why does it mean something to me? Why do I think it's, like, a healing part of Star Wars? And when I realized, I was like, oh, because, like, it was definitely something, you know, yeah, like you said, the romantic love broke it. What's a different kind of relationship than we've seen in Star Wars before? We've never seen two Force users in love. And what can that be? You know, what does that mean? And what does that look like? And yeah, I think love in all of its different forms have been kind of both powerful and poisonous to the Force. So, you know, why can't romantic love make it all better?
Or when did Reylo click for you? Was it during The Force Awakens, during The Last Jedi? I know for different people, it's clicked at different times. And I think that's the most interesting part about this story, is it can really dawn on you at any moment. The light bulb goes off and you're like, oh, okay, that's how it is. And I love seeing new people come into the fold on Twitter and, you know, just being like, oh, I see it now, you know, and that's such a great moment.
Yeah, for me, it was kind of late. It was definitely after The Last Jedi. I mean, I was like watching it and then kind of afterwards really like marinating on what I thought that was, what was actually going on. I think it took a while, maybe not a while to like, I think immediately after I watched the movie, I was like, oh, there's definitely like something going on there. I think it took a while for me to like really, you know, I had to write through it and kind of listen to stuff and talk to people before I like really landed on like my extreme feelings of like, oh yeah, this is definitely something I see as romantic love. For me, it was kind of, I had to divorce myself from this idea of them being related, not because I think that The Last Jedi does anything to make you think that, but I think I spent the majority of the time between The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi like theorizing that they were somehow going to be relatives. And so, as I'm sure a lot of us did. And so it was like, I had to kind of be like, okay, that's not a thing. What is it if it's not that? So it took some time, but, I think definitely through writing about it more and through, you know, listening to podcasts like Sky Talkers and other ones, listening to what people were saying, I was like, it feels kind of undeniable to me now, even if it's not something that's ever like fully realized within the text of the movies, I feel like it's at least intentionally, I would say, romantic.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that completely. So talking on your podcast that's coming out soon, it's called Halo Reylo, and you host it with Natasha Fox.
Yes.
And it's a limited series. How is this podcast different than some of the Reylo discourse that's already been out there? You know, what is this going to be adding to the mix, the melting pot of Reylo?
Yeah, well, the intention there is, because, there's so many podcasts already, you know, hosted by incredible people who talk about this already. My intent wasn't to kind of like do something that was like besting that or anything. I wanted to talk more about like the community itself, like kind of only about Reylo and the people in it. So people who come at it from different ways and how Reylo, like, you know, like for me, like I said, it kind of informed my fandom again and helped me find my way back into it. I wanted to find other people that have had different journeys with it and how they express that in different ways. So, you know, we're going to talk to people who like have cosplayed and fanfic writers and just people who've come at it from different perspectives. So yeah, we're still putting that all together, but that's hopefully going to be the intent of it. We did our first episode, which is kind of, Nat, my co-host, has been a part of the fandom since The Force Awakens, so she's like one of those, you know, OG Reylos, as I call them. So she kind of, in our first episode, we go through like kind of the history of, you know, how it developed and some of the ups and downs and what people have been dealing with just by saying that they're shippers in the Star Wars world, which is a whole lot. So
What have you found so far from the podcast? I mean, are you doing a mix of online research, but also like speaking with people interview wise?
Yeah, well, we haven't really recorded anything beyond that first episode so far. So I haven't, you know, we're putting together a list of the people that we're going to have on the show. So I haven't really like arrived at anything specific yet, but I'm hoping that in this, you know, this time between now and The Rise of Skywalker, before we know for sure how things wind up, that we can just kind of, talk to some cool folks and, yeah, just really like the whole intent behind it really was to, for me to like use whatever platform I have to sort of legitimize the shipping corners of fandoms, because I think that's still something that has a lot of stigma attached to it. You know, as we, I think we mentioned this in our first episode, Nat and I, that, you know, in Star Wars, it's very, it's like an acceptable thing to be really into like ships and droids and to know all the ins and outs of that kind of thing. But like, you know, if you want to talk about romance, it's suddenly like, ew, girl stuff. And like people, you know, kind of, they attach this, this sort of, you know, bad flavor, I guess, to that. And so I think that's silly, because I think, especially in my experience with the Reylo community, it's been people who have seen things that maybe other people don't see that's being more and more legitimized by like materials coming out. And it's like, see, they're actually onto something, and like you're trying to undervalue what people are saying and how they approach their fandom. And I think that's not cool. So just kind of, yeah, that was sort of the idea behind it.
Yeah. I think of the Han Solo line, women always find out the truth, always.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. I was thinking about that the other day when we were recording.
I have to say too, your podcast's like theme song, at least in the like the minute trailer that you released, that slaps. That song slaps. Can you tell us a little bit about who made that song and kind of what was the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, that's my friend Stephen Boyd. His username is DJ Empirical, and he's a DJ who's, I met him through another friend's podcast, and he created awesome music for that. We've become good friends. And so I knew, it was actually funny, when I first started the idea for this podcast, I wanted it to be, I was going to do a Dark Ray podcast, and it was going to still be like a limited series type thing. And I just had a hard time like actually like knowing what that meant. You know, I was like, a Dark Ray podcast sounds cool. And then I was like, I don't know what we talk about week to week. Like, I just kind of, the idea sounded cooler. And then I had a hard time kind of putting it into reality. But he first created the music for that. So it was just Ray's theme and kind of like a arcadey, dark kind of, you know, redoing. And when I told him, I was like, I actually think I'm going to switch it to a Reylo thing, but I don't want to lose your music. Can you just put Kylo's theme in there too? And he was like, sure. So that's kind of what it is. It's like a darker version of Rey's theme, kind of like remixed a little bit. And then his theme kind of comes in eventually. So it's really cool. I was super excited about it.
Yeah. And the art, I got to say, when I look at the artwork for your podcast, I don't know why. And I'm hoping there is some connection, but it makes me think of like a Harry Potter cover.
Yes.
Like it seems like it would be the cover of one of those books. It makes me think of, I think in particular, like the Goblet of Fire almost.
Yeah.
Like it looks exactly like in terms of style and color scheme. Is that at all kind of intentional? Is that inspired by it at all?
No, it wasn't intentional, but I did the artist After Blossom. I've seen her artwork. She's done a lot of beautiful Reylo artwork, and I just kind of DM'd her. Or no, I think, actually, maybe I put out a call for like artists when I like had decided on the topic, and she luckily, I was kind of hoping that she would respond to me and she did right away with saying like, I'd be really interested in this. And I was like, oh great. Cause I knew her stuff was just beautiful. And, I just kind of let her go with it. I was just like, I just want Rey and Kylo involved. Like, I don't really care what else you do. I trust your instincts. And then she sent me back that. And I was like, oh my God, so beautiful. And like, just like way more than I was even expecting. Not that I wasn't expecting it to be great, but yeah.
Yeah.
When she sent me that, I was like, oh, I'm going to continue to use you for every commission that I have. Because it's so beautiful.
You see great artwork that somebody created for you and you just want to faint. You're like, oh my God, this is real.
Yes.
And it kind of really puts it in the focus for you. And it's like, it's happening.
Yes. It motivates you. Cause that's when I was like, okay, now I have to do this. You know, I've got these beautiful like art, you know, the music and the art coming together. Cause I think I was, you know, I always wanted to, but I think that really kind of like lights the fire under you to be like, okay, now it's time to get going. And these people have created this beautiful stuff for you and it's time to like put it all together. And then the text, I wanted to also say the text on the podcast, my sister did that. So After Blossoms did the actual artwork. And then my sister, who's a graphic designer, her name's Liz Romaine. She did the font work for it too, which, you know, font work is definitely like also brings it all together. Cause like, it doesn't look good unless your typography stuff is good also. So,
You don't want to put Comic Sans on your podcast cover.
Right. And she was the only person like, you know, that I knew who did stuff like that, who I was like, okay, I really trust your like font instincts. So yeah,
I love that, font instincts. It's underrated.
It
now
is.
What do you think will be the biggest challenge of this podcast? Because I think you're doing really great work. I think the fact that rather than talk strictly about the actual content of Reylo, which I'm sure you will too, along with everything that's happening, but actually going to the people in the community and speaking with them and finding out, like, you know, who have been big influencers with this idea, like, what do you think will be the biggest challenge for you and Natasha?
I think the biggest challenge is honestly just going to be scheduling and like getting ourselves all on the same plate. I know that sounds boring and technical. I'm not too worried about getting actual guests, because we already kind of reached out to all the people we want. So it's just, I think it's just figuring out like times that work for all of us, because we're all pretty busy. So, you know, setting a time and getting all of that stuff down. And then also, like I was kind of telling you off air, like iTunes is taking longer than I was expecting to approve this. So that kind of threw a wrench in some of my scheduling. So it's just like, you know, the fun little technical things when you're starting a podcast on your own for the first time, you just kind of have to figure that stuff out along the way. So
yeah.
Yeah. Luckily Natasha's done other podcasts before, so she's been kind of my guiding light through all of this, like how to put everything together and whatever. But yeah, no, and she's got a great roster of people. Yeah, it's just putting all the schedule, especially, you know, now that the movie's so close, we kind of wanted to do this around the release and do it limited series. So it's just going to be getting everyone, you know, when they have time and stuff, but I think we'll make it work. It might be a little shaggy, but hey, why not?
I mean, we're only 45 days out from The Rise of Skywalker. Not that anybody or myself is counting, but I think you're going to have a lot of great stuff to talk about come December. Now, speaking of other things to talk about here, so I got to go back to the article that you wrote on Bendemption and you being a Bendemptionist as well. Now, I want to get your take on why you think Kylo Ren can be redeemed, because this and many other people, I think, is a hill we will die on. And it's, you know, redemption is such a central theme to Star Wars. And I think it's important to take a step back and ask, like, you know, why redemption? You know, what does it teach us about, you know, ourselves as a collective community? This article that you wrote, you know, you mentioned Gilgamesh in here, all this really great mythology, yin and yang. And you wrote, the phrase carries a number of readings, referring to no one has ever really gone, but key among them is that Kylo is still salvable. Luke knows this firsthand, having witnessed Vader's sacrifice and final good deed. Anakin Skywalker achieved karma, a Buddhist concept that is the sum of a person's actions in all states of existence and which decides one's fate in future existences. Karma is inherently redemptive. Good deeds restore good faith. And you go on and say, you know, Kylo could acknowledge his failures and he can also find salvation in The Rise of Skywalker. And because he fell from a shorter height, his goodness may not be transactional. He could indeed get to live. So by that notion, you know, Vader had to be redeemed and die, but, you know, Kylo could change that story. It's not just about redeeming yourself because it's your last ditch effort to be a good person. It's like you will live on and have to continue being a good person. And that's how I read that final line. So what is your take on Bendemption and why is it something that needs to happen in The Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah, well, like you said, I mean, Star Wars has definitely always been a redemption story. So to me, that's sort of, like you said, non-negotiable. It's something that I don't understand, like, what the point of the sequel trilogy is if he just ends up bad, especially the whole thing has been about his draw to the light.
Right.
You know, to me, it would seem really silly to just kind of like introduce that side of him and then just be like, oh, never mind, he's bad and he's dead. Like, whatever. You know, it just seems very
end of story.
Yeah. And especially positioning him as like the final surviving Skywalker. And, you know, he's got this place in the story where it feels like it's pretty important. And not to like take away from Rey's importance in the story also. But I do think that there's some kind of, you know, you don't make the last surviving Skywalker. I mean, I guess Leia is also surviving Skywalker, but you don't make like kind of the next generation Skywalker kid like have no hope, I guess, is kind of how I see that. So to me, it's just kind of important to like, why bring this story back and why introduce this character if that's not the story that you're telling, at least somewhat. As far as the transactional thing. I mean, I guess he could redeem himself and die, but that to me seems like a really like boring and kind of like easy way to do it. Like, I think keeping him alive is the more challenging story because, you know, it's living a life of atonement. We have not seen that in Star Wars. I think dying, it's so easy. Like, you know, you kill off a character and it's like, okay, they're redeemed, they die. That to me doesn't, they don't really have to do much for that. You know, they might do one good thing. And I think the more powerful story is keeping him alive and, you know, seeing through canon or however else it's relayed to us that he's actually like, you know, off doing stuff, doing good, you know, whether it's, I think that's more challenging too, because it, you know, depending on how the story lives on, I'm sure it will in comics or whatever. Seeing how our surviving characters have to deal with him still being alive too, I think is really interesting. You know, how does Rey feel if Kylo is redeemed and that's, you know, the next stage of his journey? How does Finn see that? You know, like, how do all these different people kind of deal with this character who's evil or who has done evil things, who has to kind of find his way back? So I just think it's a more interesting story if he lives, if he redeems himself and lives, than if he just dies on either side of that, you know, whether or not he's redeemed or not. So
absolutely. I want to see what he has to do to make people feel he's good. And I think to the book Bloodline, where Leia, she's dealing with people finding out Darth Vader is her father. Mm-hmm. And that's like a huge struggle for her. It's like, how do I prove to people that yes, he was my father, but you know, I'm a good person. So I want to see what that Bloodline story looks like in the context of her son, Kylo. You know, give me a book where now it's Kylo dealing with the fact that, you know, his bloodline stemmed from Vader, but also the fact that he was the supreme leader for quite some time and wreaked havoc from the point of view of everybody in the galaxy, even though they might not know his full sacrifice, if he makes one in The Rise of Skywalker, of, you know, killing Palpatine with Rey. I think it'd actually be, I'm under this like theory that it'd be kind of interesting if nobody knows Palpatine's back except for Rey and Kylo, kind of like a Voldemort-esque storyline of some sort, where like Dumbledore and Harry only know Voldemort's back.
And I think that's super cool.
Kylo makes this tremendous good deed with Rey to kill Palpatine, and he lives the rest of his days nobody even knowing that he saved the galaxy. And it's like the dramatic irony that could provide in a story is just amazing. It's chef's kiss.
Yeah,
I just want that, you know.
Yeah, I want something like that too. Something that's kind of tragic in like its implications, but like definitely like more, you know, more meaty, I guess. And also, you mentioned Leia. I think that's something that I always bring up to people too. I'm just like, you know, I've had definitely on Twitter get feedback sometimes whenever I post anything kind of pro Kylo or pro Bendemption, of people saying like, well, he's a murderer and he's evil and he did all of these things. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, he's definitely killed people and whatever. I mean, there's a whole psychology can kind of, you know, track onto that, which is that he was kind of abused and manipulated his whole life and thinks he has to do that.
Right.
But even like, even beyond that, just symbolically, like if he never is redeemed and dies, then Han Solo died for nothing. Luke kind of died for nothing. And Leia just gets a like depressing ending. Like, there's no hope for anybody if that's what happens to him. And I feel like these are stories about hope. So I don't know what that would do, you know. Like that would be the most miserable possible ending for everybody, because all of our original heroes loved him so much that they were like willing to do these grand sacrificial acts for him. And if he just dies and is never good, then literally all of these people just died for no reason. So just to what it means to this story, I feel like it's, you know, I don't know, it seems all a little grim.
I couldn't have said it better. I mean, rebellions are built on hope, as Jen Erso said, and even Leia is built on hope, her whole storyline. And then she even says in The Last Jedi, you know, hope is like the sun. If you only believe in it, when you see it, you'll never get through the night.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is literally telling you that, you know, hope is all we've got. And the story is going to end on a hopeful note. As Daisy Ridley would say, it's satisfying. I can't do her accents. I butchered it. Call it. We're cutting the show off.
We're just done right now.
So yeah, I love Bendemption. I really hope it does happen. Is that something that you might touch on in your Reylo podcast? Like, how much do you think Bendemption kind of feeds into Reylo, and like, how are the two intertwined?
Definitely. I definitely have a whole episode planned on that, because I do think that the two go hand in hand for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. I think you can be a Bendemptionist and not be into Reylo. I think that's possible. Mm-hmm. But I do think something, I mean, not to go down the into the weeds with this, but something that I really think, and I've pointed this out on Twitter and stuff before, you know, to people being mad at me, but I do think the story this time is we don't traditionally in these types of fantasy stories see how a woman's forgiveness plays into these things. It's almost always fathers and sons, or, you know, redemption stories are often kind of like it's a man forgiving another man. And so we haven't really seen something like that play out where it's a woman forgiving a man, or, you know, it's just kind of like a foreign thing in movies like this. And so to me, like, part of the Raylo thing is like her capacity for forgiveness, because she's such a good person. What does that look like through the scope of the story? So I think that's what's really intriguing to me too, because, you know, we've seen the father-son thing a million times. So I'm interested to see it, especially if it's a romantic thing, like how that works and how that operates in this world.
You mentioned in your trailer, as we start to close out the show here, you mentioned the trailer for Halo Raylo. It's an exciting yet bittersweet time to be a Star Wars fan. Did you want to elaborate on that in terms of why you feel that way and why other people might feel that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons why it might feel that way. For me, I guess what I mostly meant by that was just that it's, you know, the saga story is almost over. And I think I love all sorts of Star Wars. You know, I'm really excited for The Mandalorian. I'm excited for more Clone Wars. I'm excited to see, you know, Kenobi and what they do. But to me, like, my foundational love for Star Wars is the Skywalker saga. So I think it's just not having that is something to look forward to anymore.
Yeah.
It's just kind of sad. And especially these characters, I'm sure they'll, like I said, I'm sure they'll live on in other iterations and comics and whatnot. So it's not like you're really saying goodbye to them, but, you know, you kind of are, for at least for now. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of how I feel, is like these characters I've attached a lot of meaning to, just personally and professionally, kind of, won't be around in the same way anymore. So I think I'm kind of both looking forward to that in some, you know, stress relieving ways, and and kind of dreading it in the way I said on another podcast I did this week, that Star Wars always feels like my home base. Like, I feel like I write about other things, but I can always kind of come back to that, and it'll feel kind of weird, like, not having that home base there anymore. Yeah.
Or it's like our Northern Star, you know, it guides us in the right direction and gives us peace and purpose, as literally Luke Skywalker went out with. And I think of the trailer, you know, we had the shot of Rey and Kylo in the throne room, and it says the story lives forever.
Yeah.
And I think the line, no one has ever really gone, it's almost going to be like the new I am your father. I feel like it's going to be like one of those quotable lines that everybody keeps going back to for like generations of Star Wars. And I think that right there is telling us, you know, even though these stories are ending right now, no one has ever really gone. We may see these characters again at some point in some fashion, and there is more to this galaxy than just 9 movies, you know?
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you a couple rapid fire questions to close out the show. And I like doing this with each of my guests. So how do you think you'd be different without Star Wars? I don't think that one's as rapid as I like it to be, but it's a good question I like to ask.
Yeah, I think for me, obviously, you know, I've talked a lot about professionally, it's just been very important to me and has helped me. I think honestly, probably why I have like my staff writer job is through Star Wars. So I think my professional life would look completely different without it. Personally, I mean, I think I've met a lot of friends and stuff through it too. So I think I don't even know. I think because of the professional element, I think it would be completely different. I don't know how, but it would be.
Yeah, I totally get that. Now, what excites you the most for Star Wars right now? Let's take Rise of Skywalker out of the equation, because I know everybody wants that movie. I want that movie so bad. I'm, you know, my leg's bouncing every day when I'm sitting down because I just keep thinking about it. So what are you most looking forward to right now?
This is like kind of vague because I don't know, you know, if this is even a thing in the works, but I'm really looking forward to seeing like what other original shows they come up with for Disney Plus, because I do think that's going to be like the thing that we really start seeing more of is like Disney Plus content. I know they're doing that with Marvel. I feel like it's only natural in this time where they try to figure out what they're doing with Star Wars movies that they're going to focus more on TV. And I think it's an exciting time because I think, you know, we might see more Dave Filoni stuff, or like, you know, some new creators kind of getting to get in there and tell these new stories. I'm just excited to see like how they map out where we go next. And yeah, I'm hoping to see some more women creators and people of color and stuff, you know, just seeing that kind of expand a little bit. And I think it'll probably start on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Hey, Benioff and Weiss, those guys are out, and I'm telling people, if Rian Johnson's the next trilogy, even if he's not directing it, I say throw a woman in there to direct this trilogy and then have him work along with her, and it'd be the greatest combination for a trilogy ever. And I just want that so bad. I want that.
I really want a Rian Johnson, Dave Filoni, like, female collaborator, like triple
threat.
Yeah. Cause I think Filoni and Rian Johnson have really similar kind of, you know, ideas about the Force and stuff. And so I'd really like to see them, you know, mix it up with somebody else and kind of, you know, create this new cool weird thing.
God, I love weird Star Wars so much. Never stop Filoni. What is one story that you really want to see? You talk about, you know, more content on Disney Plus. Is there a particular character or time period that you're really interested in?
I do want to see, this is going to be kind of like a multi-part answer. I do want to see, I know, like, Benioff and Weiss, we heard that they were going to talk about, like, you know, the beginnings of the Jedi Order. That is a story I really want to see, just because the Jedi stuff, the mysticism of the Force, is my favorite stuff in Star Wars. I like you said, weird Star Wars. I like when it gets weird, and I feel like that's a really good opportunity. But also on the complete polar opposite of that, like, whenever I try to, like, think about what I think the world looks like after Rise of Skywalker, I mean, obviously even without the plot of that, I just don't know, you know, what that looks like. I don't know what the world looks like if we're telling stories outside of that and in the future. I think that's really exciting. So I think I just want to see some kind of, like, I don't know. That's not a very good answer, but I really just want to see, like, what everything looks like after these big saga stories have wrapped up. And I hope we see, like, just some new cool women in, you know, doing stuff. I don't care if it's Force related or not, but that's a very not specific answer, but
yeah, no, that's perfect. Is there a woman that you really want to see involved in Star Wars, whether it's a director or an actress or even writers?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if I, on the spot, I can't think of anybody, like, off the top of my head. There's so many amazing people. You know, this is a weird answer, but she was up for, I think, a few different parts in Star Wars, but I know Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black. I think she was up for Jyn Erso maybe in Rogue One or something. She's an actress that I love, and to me, she has such a, like, Star Wars-y aesthetic. Like, she's kind of rough and, like, or can be rough. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she's a really great Canadian actress, and ever since I've heard her, like, being kind of mentioned in the same breath as Star Wars, I've been, like, really I've been really anxious to see her in there. Yeah. Somehow I don't care who she plays, I think she'd be really great. So off the top of my head, that's my answer.
I'll say somebody I've been thinking of recently, and this is just from watching Watchmen, I would really like to see Regina King involved in Star Ooh. Wars.
That'd be great. Give me, like, Regina King, she is, Tatiana Maslany's show. I'm there.
I'm like, she's so good in Watchmen. If you're out there listening to this and you haven't started watching Watchmen yet, holy crap, it's so good. I know you're a couple episodes behind. I saw your tweet today.
I'm one episode behind, yeah.
Oh, one episode, yeah. But hey, that Catherine Hahn show, also so good. It's so, so good. I just randomly started watching it last week, and I was like, all right, Sunday nights are consumed by HBO. Anyways, yes. I digress. What is your favorite Star Wars movie and why?
My favorite Star Wars movie is The Last Jedi. I think because, just going back to everything we've been talking about, I think it's weird. I think thematically it's very rich and interesting to me. I think I love what it does with the Star Wars mythos, which is kind of like put it under a different kind of focus. It makes you really look at things closer. It kind of, you know, the idea of, like, the straight hero's journey, it really kind of unpacks that. And yeah, it just surprised me in every possible way. And that's what I want out of movies. Like, I don't want to walk in, like, expecting some greatest hits thing. I mean, sometimes that's fun, but, like, for me, I want a movie to just completely, like, annihilate me, basically. And for me, The Last Jedi was completely opposite of everything that I thought was going to happen in that movie, and, like, in such a good and exciting way. So that's, yeah, that one's important to me.
Great. Favorite character?
Oh boy, it's complicated. I think Rey is probably my favorite if I really had to, like, pick one. Even though she's, you know, her story is incomplete, so sometimes it feels hard to, like, say that, because I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen to her in this next one. But as of now, I think, just because, like I was saying, she's kind of been my window back into this, and a character I really deeply relate to. I was not expecting that when I saw The Force Awakens, to be like crying within the first 20 minutes of seeing her like isolated Jakku life and like relating to it a little too hard. So I was like, yeah, she's been sort of my person through these new ones. So I think just from that alone, she's my favorite.
Perfect. You are trapped on an island and you can pick one droid to help you get off the island. You can choose either K2SO, R2D2, BB-8, or C-3PO.
So this answer is going to be more based in like who I think would be the most helpful, not who I would actually want to be on an island. I think C-3PO would be probably the most useful in terms of getting off. Like, I feel like he just knows the most about stuff, but I feel like if I had to be trapped with one of them on an island, like with no foreseeable rescue, I would probably pick R2. But yeah, I feel like C-3PO would be, he just seems like he would, because he's so anxious, I feel like he's probably really good at figuring stuff out. So I feel like he would get us out of there pretty fast.
Could find some like weird ancient ruins and read them off to you and be like, oh, this says the boat's over that way. And you're like, great, we're off the island.
Yeah, he'd be like, the probability of such and such is this. Like, I feel like he would know what's up.
Yeah, he's like, don't eat those berries on the tree. You do not want to eat those.
Totally. He would know about the surroundings more than any of the rest of them. So yeah.
Yeah. And lastly here, this is one question I do like to ask. So what is one word or phrase to describe the emotions that Star Wars evokes from you when you think about it or watch it?
I don't want to go like the basic route and say hope, because I feel like that's too easy. Let me think. I guess riveted. Is that, I don't know that that's like, you know, that's kind of a nondescript word, but like for me, like when Star Wars is really firing off on all cylinders, I just feel very riveted by the characters and story, and yeah, it kind of like can impact me deeper than anything else when it's like at its best. So yeah, I guess riveted.
Great. I love that. We have had a lot of hopes, but riveted I haven't gotten yet. So that's awesome.
I was going to try to quickly thesaurus.com hope and like, it's another word that's not hope, but that's,
you're like, whom, let me think, starts typing in the background.
I almost did it. I didn't, but I
almost did. To be honest, I wouldn't have judged you at all. I use the thesaurus website every day.
It's a writer's best friend.
Right. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for coming on Friends of the Force today. And for those of you out there, again, Lindsay's podcast, along with Nat Fox, will be called Halo Raylo. It should be available sometime soon. And you're also doing, it looks like, a Nerdist series on different Star Wars lore. So you just recently did lightsabers, which is pretty cool. But what else do you got going on besides those two things? Or you can speak to those again. And where can people find you online?
Yeah, I'll also be doing a Mandalorian podcast. So I'm going to be very Star Wars podcasty for these next little bit. Yeah, and then you can find me on Nerdist.com every day. And then also you can follow me on Twitter at Lindsay Romain, just my full name.
Great. Yeah, definitely give her a follow. She's got some great Star Wars takes and they're my favorite. And again, amazing writing. I will keep reading everything you're putting out. But thank you for what you do in the Star Wars community. So it helps to wrap my head around so many different ideas that are out there. And you put it all in the one gift that you just give to us. And we unwrap it and love it. So again, Lindsay, thank you so much for coming on Friends of the Force. And for all of you out there listening, thank you. And may the Force be with you always. Thank you all for listening to today's episode of From a Certain Point of View here at Friends of the Force. Now make sure wherever you listen to the podcast, you rate us 5 stars and review us. That helps other people discover the podcast and join the Friends of the Force community. You can find us at Friends of Force on Twitter and Friends of the Force on Instagram. You can also find me at Brad Whipple on Twitter. You can also consider joining our Patreon at patreon.com/friendsoftheforce, starting at just $1 a month. Thank you to our current patrons, Alderanian Rose, Neil Lowry, Royal Farm Boy, Michael Condon, Chris from Kentucky, and T. And Friends of the Force is also a part of the Star Wars Escape Pods network with other sister shows that include Sky Talkers and Unmistakably Star Wars and the Geeky Bubble podcast. Again, the network is at We Are Escape Pods on Twitter, promoting positivity and fandom. That is all for today. We will see you sometime soon here at Friends of the Force. And until then, we are all ones with the Force. We are all friends of the Force. And may the Force be with you always.